Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
After the hour, thanks very much for joining me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, I know you can feel your IQ shoot through the roof. Every minute that you listen to this show, your intelligence goes up, doesn't it? I can tell. We got a good friend with us who doesn't need his intelligence to go any higher because he's a really smart guy. Jim Copeland is the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute, and he joins us quite often to talk to us about what's been going on in the litigation and trial lawyers, and he's got a new study out called Trial Lawyers, Inc., Healthcare, and he talks about, in this thing, they quite a bit of... About right now, Jim, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here.
It's good to have you here. It's, in some ways, even though it's fun... trial lawyers, Jim, but the truth is, the runaway litigation, the runaway juries, and the runaway awards, the ridiculous awards that are given these days for some of the things that you report on in your study, the trial lawyers were only the ones who executed these things. They had 12 co-conspirators in this too, didn't they? In each. The juries.
Well, I think that's in one sense it's a fair characterization, in another sense it's not. And what I mean by that is I think the jurors do their best to make a good faith effort at making the right decisions. The problem is a lot of the cases that we're seeing before juries are very complicated medical, scientific, technical questions. Jurors really don't have the expertise to be able to weigh in on whether, say, there was an error in the delivery of a baby and that birth asphyxiation resulted, and that birth asphyxiation caused the baby to be born with cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. Because any percentage of children is already born with cerebral palsy. The jurors aren't necessarily qualified to say, well, this individual was taking Vioxx, had some heart problems, the Vioxx caused the heart problems. Based on the scientific evidence we have, that we know where Vioxx actually can cause heart problems, how much you need to be taking, how long you need to be taking it, etc. A lot of this stuff is going over the heads of the jurors by their own admission. So I think jurors in their faith do the best they can. The problem is they're being asked to answer questions that are really over their heads a lot of times.
Well, exactly. But there are a couple of issues there, Jim, and that is, the law provides for you to be tried by a jury of your peers, your case to be heard by a jury of your peers. Well, many of your peers, Jim, are able to get out of being on a trial like this. Therefore, a lot of the people who wind up being on are not necessarily your peers. And so I think that's one thing. I think that more and more Americans should take being on a jury a lot more serious. I've been on several in my life, believe it or not. And the other thing is that we have a societal problem, Jim, and you know this, and this is victimization thing. Too many Americans believe that we're all subject to being victims of something, and therefore it's somebody's fault. Therefore, somebody must pay, and it must be the company right in front of me. What do you think?
I think those are both fair points. I mean, one of the issues on the tort reform agenda for some of the tort reformers is trying to make sure that you have a better pool of jurors. And by better, I don't in any way degrade the people who actually do
Absolutely
serve.
Not. Absolutely
but I mean,
not.
I mean, a fuller pool of jurors that's better representative of a actual cause. Of society, and so there's a actually proposed legislation that some states have adopted called the Jury Patriotism Act. The notion is to say that, you know, it's tough to get out of jury service. You know, if you've got important things going on, you might be able to defer for some period of time. But you're not going to be able to just indefinitely put it off and get,
well, and see,
get
that's
off
exactly
of
what,
serving.
That's exactly what I have done. There have been times when I couldn't, it wasn't the week that they wanted me there, but they just pulled that out of the hat. And I went to the judge and I said, look, I want to serve. Can we find a time that doesn't put me out of business?
Right, and that's, you know, I've done the same thing. Understandably, if it's a civil trial, I tend not to wind up. But
right, because of
what I do,
because of your expertise.
But I'm in the pool,
right.
And so, you know, the lawyers, you know, have to you know, intervene and decide if they want to use a challenge to take
right.
me off the jury, et cetera. So I you know, I think that is a
stand by, Jim.
Report.
I got to take a quick break. We got to sell some stuff. When we come back, we're going to get Jim Copeland and talk to us some more about how much this is costing you and me. How much is this coming out of our pockets? 20 tails. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 Tell. That's Robert Cray on blues guitar. You know what I think about Robert Cray? He's the best. If you like blues, you won't wander very far away from Robert Cray. Anything he does. And by the way, I don't get a nickel for saying that, folks. I just like his music. Jim Copeland likes blues, don't you, Jim?
Absolutely.
If you're on this show, you got to like blues, Jim. That's one of the requirements. Jim Copeland, by the way, folks, director of Center for Policy, for Legal Policy, I should say, at the Manhattan Institute. Tell us about the Manhattan Institute, Jim.
We're a nonprofit think tank here in New York, and we've been around for a little over 25 years. We address a range of policy issues from medical care to urban and policing to immigration to, you know, legal policy, which I work on, you know, sort of race and ethnicity issues, pretty full spectrum. We've been doing legal issues for about 20 years, and what we focus on exclusively are these sorts of civil justice issues, litigation, lawyers, lawsuits. Touch on a number of the other major legal issues that are out there. This is really where we have our focus.
Well, and folks, as you know, Walter Olson is another great member of the Manhattan Institute, who's a member of our Brain Trust, joins us quite often, and as is Tamar Jacoby, and seems like maybe another one or two, Jim, of your folks that are regulars on the show. The Manhattan Institute's an outstanding organization. Give us the website, please, Jim.
It's www.manhattan-institute.org. And then folks that want to download our report that just came out, the Trial Lawyers Inc. Healthcare, can go straight to that website, which is www.triallawyersinc.com. You can also get more information on litigation and legal reform at our online web magazine and weblog, www.pointoflaw.com. So that's
right.
A lot of websites.
Exactly. But you can get that, and they can download this report by PDF, right?
By PDF, we also have it set up in an HTML format where you can click to any section of the report and see it online.
Good deal. Okay, let's talk about what you have a number of examples of how excesses by trial lawyers, some of the cases that are taken to juries, and some of the jury fines, some of the jury results, I should say, are costing us a lot of money and unnecessarily. Talk about those, please.
Well, it's costing us a lot of money directly and indirectly, and it's also really reducing the quality of health care we get. If you just look at the direct cost alone, medical malpractice alone, you're talking about annual tax, say, on the American people that's direct of $26.5 billion. That's the equivalent of the U.S. pharmaceutical sales for Pfizer, the world's largest health care corporation. But most estimates would say that the indirect cost for medical malpractice litigation is far $50 and $100 billion, and that comes from defensive medicine, unnecessary tests,
right.
Unnecessary referrals that doctors are doing because they're afraid of being sued. With drug litigation, if you just look at the Fen-Phen and Vioxx litigation and the estimated cost there, you're talking about $7 billion. Annualized over the life of those drugs, that's about $18 billion, or 10% of the total annual revenues for the entire U.S. pharmaceutical. If you look at that sum for those two drugs, it's roughly 10 times the annual research and development budgets for the two companies at that issue, Wyeth and Merck. So the real cost here is not just that direct cost, which goes into drug pricing, but the indirect cost of reducing the incentive companies have to do research into new products and new drugs, and we've seen this in a number of markets, notably the vaccine market. And the president this morning is going to be talking about flu vaccine. Mm-hmm. We saw in the 1980s that vaccines were almost driven from the U.S. market after a wave of lawsuits. You had a 25,000% increase in lawsuits against the DPT vaccine, the diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus.
Right.
Then you had a 10,000% increase in price. You saw from the market.
What are we down to now as far as vaccine manufacturers? What are we down, what does your report say? Two? We're down to two now in the United States?
There are two for the flu vaccine. I think there are five now overall that manufacture vaccines, but this is down from, say, 26 in the late
90s
before the litigation explosion happened. And some of that's due to general industry consolidation, but really because of the nature of vaccine production. You know, it's a single shot, that it's a preventative medicine. It's particularly vulnerable to these types of lawsuits. But it's really just a microcosm of the total picture for drugs and medical devices. Bendectin, the morning sickness drug for women, was pulled from the market, and we see a doubling in the number of hospitalizations of women during pregnancy for morning sickness.
Right.
The Lyme disease vaccine was pulled from the market, and we see a 40% in Lyme vaccine the next year. So there's just a number of cases where you can see that health care actually decreases due to the exit of drugs from the market.
Not to mention the doctors who are leaving various states, the insurance companies that are pulling out of various states that are resulting, where some of these trials, I should say, are resulting. What should we do about all this, Jim?
Well, we say that there should be even a more aggressive, more comprehensive, holistic reform than what's been on the table. We certainly have seen effectiveness from, say, in the medical malpractice arena, caps on pain and suffering, non-economic damages, and allowing still, of course, full compensation for economic injuries. Those sorts of states, California, which has had them in place for 30 years, have seen a 250% increase in medical malpractice insurance premiums, which sounds high until you realize the country as a whole has had a 50% increase over the same time span.
Right.
But Jim, we think that.
Hold on to that thought. Yeah. I'm going to let you finish that thought right after these messages. And I'm also going to get an idea of what Jim tell us his ideas on the new nominee for Supreme Court Judge Sam Alito. We're going to get Jim to do that right after these messages. It's 10 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I encourage you to check it out when you get a chance. You can become one of the many happy throngs of small business owners and those who want to be who go to our website. And I think it helps them have the maximum opportunity to be successful. And there's not another site like it in the world, folks. And I know that's what you'd expect from me, to be not like anybody else. And we certainly aren't. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Comes every week on Sunday by email. And the blog will come to you every day if you want to subscribe to our blog. And it's certainly not like anybody else's blog. And you can find it on the homepage or at smallbusinessadvocate.com or go directly there, jimsblog.biz. Jim Copeland is on our website. He's all over our website because of the things he's done with us in the past and he's doing today. He's on our blog even as we speak. And Jim, I know you're pretty excited about that, aren't you?
I'm very excited.
see what I mean, folks? He's so excited about that. Jim, I've got this wacky idea. Okay, and of course my audience says, well, so what's new? I mean, I got a lot of wacky ideas, but this one I think is only wacky to other people. It's not wacky to me. Why can't a judge say, you know what, this is ridiculous, and rein in some of this stuff? Don't judge have the latitude to rein in some of these runaway deals and put some curbs on that? Don't they have that ability?
I certainly agree with you. I don't think it's wacky at
folks,
all.
Folks, we're talking about most
of American history, that's what happened.
Right.
And,
we're talking about these lawsuits, folks, these frivolous lawsuits. Some of them aren't frivolous, but the awards are ridiculous.
Exactly. Some of them aren't frivolous, but the damages are no good, and the judges can step in and reduce the damages. Some of them aren't frivolous under the legal definition, which is, you know, people who aren't lawyers won't necessarily get, but they're meritless. They're not suits that should be brought, even if there's some colorable, plausible possibility of success. So judges should do a better job of getting rid of cases. The problem is, a lot of the rules have been set up in the last 40 years or so that make it tough for judges to do that. We sort of had a revolution in the law schools, the notion that the judges should just basically manage the process, let the juries make the decisions. And for some cases that makes sense. For the more complicated medical and health cases, it really doesn't. And we even call for things that some people would call even more wacky in our report, but we call for, say, having the federal government preempts drug lawsuits that have gone through the Food and Drug Administration without fraud, and say that the federal regulatory scheme preempts state common law tort claims. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't get compensation if there's side effects from drugs that are particularly harmful, but instead of going through the state common law juries in the regular state courts, you go through an administrative body that's used to handling these claims, that has experts. That's what we do for children's vaccines, and we argue you could extend that same principle, to all pharmaceuticals. And for medical malpractice, that's going to be at the state level. It's not a federal issue. Doctors are regulated at the state. But there's a lot states could do to develop specialized health courts that at least have better competence in dealing with these. A number of states would still have to preserve the jury as the ultimate arbiter of whether the doctor actually should or shouldn't, whether he actually did or didn't have an injury. But there's a lot that they could do to tighten up the rules there.
One thing, Jim, is that as the 21st century unfolds, more Americans are going to be self-insured. More and more Americans are going to be business owners, and less and less of them are going to be employees of major corporations. That mix is already changing. That evolutionary process has already sailed, and it's on the way. And as that happens, I think that time is going to fix this, because the juries are going to be more and more sensitive to issues of the owner and less to the victims. And I think that's going to happen. But let me ask you, before we go any further, we got just about a minute. Tell me about your thoughts on Judge Sam Alito, the new nominee to replace Senator Dan O'Connor.
Well, I think he's exceptionally well qualified. I mean, here you have someone who's been a federal appeals judge for 15 years, a distinguished track record. I think it's going to be tough for some people to assess some of these cases that are already being brought out as sort of hot button or controversial cases, and without going in and actually having some legal experience and reading these opinions, it's impossible for people to know that in fact what he's done in each of these cases is a very defensible, neutral, judicious sort of decision, despite how they might be characterized by various interest groups. But, here you've got someone who has a great academic background. He's got, he's a top-flight nominee. If this guy can't get through, I don't see how any real conservative can get through.
Thank you, Jim, for being here. Thanks for all you do for us, and we appreciate it. Jim Copeland, ladies and gentlemen, with the Manhattan Institute. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. I'll be back on the other side of the news.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.